So welcome to another episode of The Reducer. God, I could sound more enthusiastic, couldn't I? I should really be professional and go like, episode 10 or something like that. But instead it's, no, another episode of The Reducer. If you haven't switched off already, it's a fucking miracle. So I'm here, as always, with Mr. David Klein.
Hello.
And Mr. Dave Rothney.
Afternoon.
Afternoon. We can't see Dave, and Dave's in his car on his mobile. So this is going to be, if you're wondering why Dave might not have the authoritative voice he normally has, it's purely technology's fault.
Yeah, indeed. Nothing to do with my self-esteem.
No, not at all. But look, before we start, I think obviously we need to laugh at Scotland and congratulate Wales. And I mean, I think the right team's got to the tournament. Because Ukraine were quite dangerous, so I'm glad they're out. And but also, you know, quite rightly, Scotland didn't make it. There's no point in having a team there. We're just going to turn up, put 12 people in goal, and then fuck off without winning the game or scoring a goal. Wales will make a fist of it and are a better team. So I'm pleased for the Welsh. Fun fact, in case you haven't heard it. The Queen was 27 the last time Wales went to the World Cup. She'd been on the throne for 6 years.
Wow. Good fact.
I know. And I listened to a podcast on the BBC, right? And they were talking about it's England, Wales. It was a Welsh presenter getting very excited, saying like, oh, you know, and now it's England, Wales in the group, and hopefully, you know, both teams might still have a chance of going through when we meet, and, you know, that's a bit of a spice to that fixture, isn't it? And I was sat there and I was thinking, do you know the other game taking place that night in our group? The USA versus Iran. You want to talk spicy? That's a terrorist attack waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, the English and the Welsh have a little bit of a local argy-bargy. Meanwhile, yeah, wow, that was...
Yeah, they won't be substitutes. They'll just swap hostages.
Brilliant.
Or they'll trade sanctions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this game's foregone. Yeah, it's been thrown. Yeah. They've thrown it for three oil fields. Oh dear. So ladies and gentlemen, we were talking about, well, we want to talk about transfers, and I guess, you know, in the modern concept of transfers, there are two, or possibly actually there's three. So I'm going to put it out there that these are the three biggest transfers in footballing history. Number one, Trevor Francis broke the £1 million barrier. That was a big deal. And he broke it by a lot. And, it, you know, if Brian Clough wasn't the kind of bloke he was, it probably would have taken a few more years. But so that's number one. The second most important transfer of all time is Jean-Marc Bosman.
Oh, good.
For obvious reasons. And the third most important transfer ever was the £235 million signing of Neymar when Barcelona didn't want him to go, and he was a big star, and Barcelona had to see somebody walk away for a transfer fee that they just simply think they thought no one would pay. And that again has as big an impact as Trevor Francis, because basically, I mean, the transfer record was broken by over 100 million. It's insane.
Yeah.
And that was, wow, yeah, we live in a world of nation state clubs. So they are the three most important transfers in history. Do we agree?
Yeah, well, it's hard to disagree. I mean, Trevor Francis as well, he was pretty good value for money by all accounts. He helped Forest win the European Cup, as it was.
Yeah. And ironically,
first season, wasn't it?
Ironically, Jean-Marc Bosman was a decent transfer as well, because he was worth nothing. He was rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose Neymar's the worst signing of the lot, then. Is he on the basis of the impact? I mean, has Neymar been a success?
I think he has, but maybe not the success that they kind of hoped for. In the same way, Messi hasn't been a success the way they hoped for. I mean, fucking hell, he can't stop banging in goals for Argentina. Now he's playing in a team that will pass him the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he's poor old Messi. He went from being beloved in Barcelona and treated like a deity to being booed by his own fans playing for Paris.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but anyway, I digress. But what I'd like to do, if they're the major transfers, what are your, you know, what are the transfers that you guys wanted to talk about? Major transfers, transfers that you've loved, transfers that you've hated in your times at your own clubs or other clubs' transfers?
It's weird. I don't remember about Trevor Francis, whether it was a good signing or not, because I can't, because sometimes you have those transfer tags that are just sort of, that people are intimidated by and they never quite work out. I'm thinking of people like Stan Collymore.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, the Chelsea have signed a few players like that. Scott Parker going to Chelsea. That was one of those, you know, where they just never quite live up, but it actually kills their career. It's just that move that they probably think back they shouldn't have made.
Let's throw two Chelsea strikers in there. Torres and Andrei Shevchenko. Neither of them should ever have fucking left where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally agree.
Chelsea have got four on that. Danny Drinkwater, if only he drank water. But
Well, what happened to him?
Well, he went to Chelsea from Leicester. They signed Kante. Yeah. And
I know, but
he's had his troubles.
No, he got nutted in a nightclub in Burnley. He was at Burnley on loan and couldn't get a game under Sean Dyche. So
went to a nightclub and got nutted.
That was their training ground. That was their training drill. I know, so I had to fuck a joke up. That was their training ground drill.
Yeah.
Under Sean Dyche, Brexit football.
Yes. Yeah, I want you to go out. Oh, sorry, I should do it properly. I want you to go out tonight, lads, and I want you to get battered and start a fight in a nightclub. That's your homework.
He's got a Savage accent, isn't he?
Not really, no.
Yeah, he's not a northerner. You depict him as an older than that.
Well, anyway. I'm trying to think where he's from. Quickly, someone Google it.
He's not an older.
No, you're.
Is he Midlands?
I don't know. Anyhow, I'm going to
that's a fucking massive digression there.
I know, because now the podcast becomes people eavesdropping on old men who can't remember things.
Yeah, unable to remember anything. What was he? Who did he play for?
It's interesting you should mention Torres there, because if you recall, part of that deal to send him to Chelsea was us getting with the proceeds. We bought two strikers, one of whom was sensational. The other was a fucking cart horse. Suarez and Carroll.
Dalglish also, at the time, the opinion was massively overspent on the cart horse that was Jordan Henderson.
Yes, that's true.
Who's gone on to lift more trophies than any Liverpool captain in history.
I know.
So, yeah.
And you have to say, a fantastically developed, improved player under Klopp, without a doubt. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Rothney, I'm minded to think of transfers that are relevant for you guys. And I'm trying to remember the name, and it's really annoying me, of the Brazilian that you signed as soon as the new owners arrived. Rubinho.
Rubinho.
Because that was like a transfer that made a lot of headlines and all the rest of it, and never really worked on the pitch, but it was a big deal.
It was a big deal, and I remember he scored. Well, it was a deflected free kick on his debut against Chelsea. Chelsea beat us. I can't remember the score. I think we lost quite heavily, but it was Rubinho. I was listening to it on the radio, and he lined up a free kick, scored it, and then I thought, "Oh, brilliant!" But it was a deflection. But he was—I mean, Mark Hughes was the manager then, and yeah, it was a big deal at the time. But he didn't really. It was a marquee signing. It was a statement signing, wasn't it? That, which is another category, I suppose. The statement signing. And in the end, he fell out with Mark Hughes and everybody else and doesn't really gone on to do much else. I'd say a bad signing.
Yeah, definitely. But literally, the definition of that, was it Ian or Liam Bradbury that you bought that ended up being...
Liam Bradbury. And we took the R's out, take the R's out, and it's Lee Bradbury. Yeah, Lee Bradbury was, that was a Joe Royal signing. And that was at a point in time when we were just, you know, clutching at straws, really. And we were always one good signing away from being decent. I don't suppose Liverpool have ever been in that situation. And younger listeners, if there are any, will think, Man City fan whinging. But no, back in the day, we were always one good signing away from turning the corner. Just wondering.
I'm going to chuck in a couple of names there. Mario Balotelli.
Yeah, Balotelli. But he redeemed himself because he was entertaining. He did a few things that we will always love him for. The Why Always Me shirt against Man United when we battered them 6-1 at Old Trafford. He scored the opener for that.
Yeah.
The goal that he scored with his shoulder against Bolton. Which, if you've never seen that, that's just hilarious.
It's the way he scores that goal with his shoulder, it's like he's got a disdain for the ball. It's like, I don't want this touching my fucking head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And there are loads of apocryphal stories about Balotelli, but some of them are, there are some that are true. And it's great. I mean, that's why he was entertaining. There was once when he was driving around central Manchester, and the police pulled him over. He was speeding. He had a load of cash in his glove box. He had something like $3,000 in cash. I'm making up the numbers. Yeah. And they said, "Why have you got all this cash in your glove box?" And he said, "Because I'm rich." and there were lots of examples of Mario Balotelli.
But also, wasn't he driving around occasionally, like he'd like drive around the poorer areas of Manchester and chuck cash out of his windows?
Yeah. I think there's some of those stories. I think I can't corroborate all of them, but there was some that went down into folklore that weren't true. But yeah, I mean, he came across as So although he didn't deliver on the pitch, he was a cult signing in a way that we sort of always will always love him, even though he was a bit of a pain in the arse.
Well, I am going to challenge you on that. Also, Micah Richards has got some great stories, and everybody always says, was he really as mad as everyone makes out? And he was like, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He says, Micah Richards went around his house sometime and he was like, I can't remember what it was. See, Balotelli was chasing him around his house with a can of paint, trying to spray paint him.
And
Micah Richards just, left. But also, I'm going to challenge you on the never delivered on the pitch. Or, you know, didn't deliver what you'd hoped. Because Aguero was assisted by...
Oh, yeah, no, what I was saying, of course. Yeah, no, what I mean was...
The assist for your most important goal.
No, that point taken. And I've just realised what Dave was saying. He meant when Balotelli went to Liverpool, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah, not at City. Yeah.
Oh, right. I'd completely forgotten he'd gone to Liverpool.
Well, if you remember, Rogers. we were desperate. Suarez had left. We were desperate for a striker.
Yeah.
Suarez had gone to Barcelona and we were just looking for anyone, basically.
Yeah.
And I think was it 16 million he signed for? Something like that. It was Brendan Rodgers signed in.
And amazed that you didn't take him on loan.
I know. Yeah. It was just an act of desperation. It was coming to the end of Rodgers' reign anyway, and it was just one of the nails in his coffin, really. And also Christian Benteke. I mean, you can probably chuck them into the same conversation, really, because he should never have left Villa.
But didn't he have one season for you lot?
No, to be fair, Klopp gave him a chance. He tried him. It just didn't work. He just wasn't a Klopp player. He was just too static, not mobile enough, couldn't press and all the rest of it. So,
We've got to get on to Leeds. But before that, just on the on a common signing, common thread, Nicholas Anelka. You see, that's an interesting
one. Oh, yeah. He played for Liverpool as well.
Le Sulk. Yeah. What was the... Howard, you probably know your football better than all of us. What was your take on Anelka?
And that's very kind of you. I think he was an absolutely fantastic player. I mean, if you look at who he played for, you know, he played, and not only that, but look who he played for, and not one set of fans will go, oh yeah, it was all right, never scored any goals. It's like, no, you know, he put it away. So he scored goals for Liverpool, Real Madrid, Arsenal,
Chelsea.
I mean, that's impressive. But then I think, which is just as impressive as anything, is his final few seasons at Bolton, where he was one of those players that, you know, Sam Allardyce recruited, that just, you know, clicked and worked in his management style. I mean, there's a lot of rumors about his brothers being his agents and, you know, only being concerned about money and basically just, you know, booting him from club to club to get signing fees. Whether that's the case or not, don't know, you know. But I do think having, you know, when players come from nothing, then it is very difficult at certain stages in their career, sometimes ever, to keep them at your club, because it's like when you've had nothing, you think you're going to fail any minute. So as a Leeds fan, our experience of that was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, who we were desperate for him to stay for another season and you know, continue, you know, work with Alan Smith as well. You know, as it is, we got Mark Viduka in, so yay. But I think we would have brought Viduka in anyway. And that might have meant we wouldn't have signed further down the line people like Fowler and stuff like that. But anyway, I digress. The point is, we were desperate for Hasselbaink to stay. And it was just way more money at Atletico Madrid. And, you know, we made him an offer, I do believe, of 1 million after tax for one season. And he turned it down. So, you know.
Wow. He was in a Jimmy Floyd piggy bank, wasn't he?
Yes. But I'll tell you what, I've got some names for you here. Leeds United transfers. Oh, hello. Oh, dear. Hey, anybody? Thomas Brolin, anyone? Anyone? Yeah. Thomas anybody Brolin. Want little fat Thomas on their team? Fucking hell. Thomas the Tank Engine would have been more fucking use in our midfield than Thomas Brolin. All he did, he got to Leeds, played a few games, and then just ate pies. it was just... Yeah, it was rubbish. But we had some, I have to say, I mean, yeah, Wilkinson, some brilliant transfers, but some absolute dogs as well. You know, like the 34-year-old Ian Rush. Bloody hell. And Wilkinson pre-season, I'm really excited about having Ian Rush in the squad. Yeah. Both of his goals that season were at Elland Road. Well done, Ian. That was just horrendous. But then one of the major Premier League transfers of all time is from Leeds United, Eric Cantona to Manchester United.
Was that was about a million? It wasn't much, was it?
Yeah.
Nope.
It was not much money at all.
Yeah.
He was their missing piece of their jigsaw, wasn't he, United?
Yeah. And Wilkinson rang Ferguson to inquire about Dennis Irwin, about seeing if he could get him to Leeds, or rather back to Leeds, where he started, I might add. And Fergie said no. Is Cantona available? And he was like, yeah, why not? Oh, well, that's gone well, hasn't it, Howard? Yeah. You rang up to buy a player and we're now fucking losing one. So
how did that happen?
Honestly, it's like, well, there was all sorts of... He basically, look, Cantona, everybody will tell you Ferguson managed Cantona brilliantly because he treated him differently to everybody else. Wilkinson's not going to do that. I mean, apart from maybe David Batty, who was always given a ball and allowed to train on his own because he refused to take part in any, like, set-piece training and stuff like that. He just wouldn't listen. So it's like, so he just used to send him off onto it. Unless they were playing five-a-sides, they just get rid of him and he'd just go and kick a ball about on another pitch. And then they'd shout him over when they needed him. But, you know, anyway.
We could sort of look at the current situation, what's going on with that? Well, with our three teams respectively, because I think there's going to be quite a lot of movement this summer for all of us.
Well, I think that'd be interesting as well. But also, I think there's, and although we may have already just fucking mentioned it, I was going to say the greatest Premier League transfers of all time. But I think number one's just been fucking mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. You know? Definitely. Cantona. Yeah, without a doubt.
I think that's true. Yeah, Batty never practiced set pieces. Is that why he missed the penalty for England?
Well, no, it wasn't. He didn't practice set pieces. He didn't practice anything. All he was interested in doing was playing football. So as soon as it was talking about, you know, particular midfield plays or anything like that, he was just not interested.
Yeah.
Some of the great transfers that have worked out, because there's been some absolute howlers.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say for Liverpool, and Dave, you'll know more than I on this, I'd say Andy Robertson is probably one of the best deals that you've done in terms of, well, quality and price. How much did you pay for him from Hull? I can't remember.
About 7 million, wasn't much. Yeah.
It was to Hull.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there were a few.
You could buy Hull for 7 million, and I don't mean the football club. I mean the fucking town.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Do you know Sammy Hoopier or Herdy Flemchester?
That is a great shout.
And he was pennies, ridiculously cheap, but went on to. I mean, he was a mainstay of that Liverpool team for best part of 10 years or more. You know.
Yeah, well, City's equivalent, if I may say so, Dave. If you're suggesting City Liverpool players, I'm going to suggest.
Well, I was about to get onto that.
Yeah, and we're both going to say the same thing at the same time. So say it after three. One, two, three. Vincent Kompany.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, no. I was going to say Andy Morrison.
Oh, Andy Morrison. Yeah.
Because really. You know, I was going to say Andy Morrison and Paul Dickov, because, you know, us getting into fantasy land and fantasy world with the despotic regime behind us, we were languishing in the second division and 2-1 down against Gillingham in injury time. And Dickov scored probably what stands as the most important goal that's ever been scored at our club. Yeah. And Andy Morrison was the captain, central defender, a tough Scotsman who got us through that season. But no, I do agree, Howard. Vincent Kompany, brilliant signing. He was signed for about 6 million and he was a midfielder when he signed. He was a holding midfielder.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, that was a gift from Mark Hughes. Wasn't there a couple of other Mark Hughes signings that stayed at the club?
Well, Pablo Zabaleta, who's an absolute club legend.
Yeah. There you go, Yeah. I mean, I do think it's like, Hughes did make some good signings, you know.
He did. Rubinho wasn't his decision, you know.
No.
He picks good players, Hughes. You know, I'm trying to think. There's always exceptions to every rule, but Zabaleta and Kompany were two, you know, cracking signings, basically. He brought Sean Mike Phillips back as well.
Yes, yeah, but actually, it's funny you should say that. How about, well, let's go weird transfers. Benitez re-signing Robbie Fowler. Yeah. I mean, this is like cold-hearted, my way or the highway, motherfucker, Rafael Benitez. That now you look back on it and you think, Jesus Christ, that was just a massive PR stunt.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. Yeah. It was just a huge PR stunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very strange. Very strange. But, oh, actually, yeah, I tell you, nearly as weird. When Caddy Dalglish started going mad when he was Liverpool manager and signed David Speedy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we had two at City. I mean, Kevin Keegan was responsible for a few. So he signed both Robbie Fowler and Steve McManaman.
Yeah, but we were paying half of Robbie's wages. So to be fair, that is a good deal.
Yeah. And also, it's good when you sang Anelka's praises earlier about all the clubs he scored a ton of goals at. He didn't score many at City. People forget he went to City, but that was his fallow season. When, yeah. Uh, yeah. But Kevin Keegan signed all these players who were, you know, former greats, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Keegan was in charge of City.
Well, one of the greatest transfers, Man City transfers. I'll tell you what, I'm doing every club today. Ali Benarbia.
Oh yeah, good call. Yeah,
I mean that is just hello Premier League, thanks to him.
Yeah, no, totally right. He got us promoted. And on the other side of that coin, a player, because like I say, in those days we were always one signing away from doing something. And under Alan Ball, we had remember Georgie King-Kladze. That yes. was the opposite. A bloke, you know, that we were the sort of team then when they just give it to Georgie. Yeah. And he would dribble with it. He was really talented, but you know, he wasn't really a team player. But you know, so he'd go down as a great signing from the fans' perspective. But we got relegated twice when he was in the team. But he was a brilliant player.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, not sure he was a team player, but he was a brilliant individual player. David Rodecastle, rest in peace. Always love watching him play.
Yeah. Same here. You bought him from us.
Yeah.
A big fan of Rodecastle. Always gave his all. I was at the Tottenham Arsenal. I was at Highbury for the Tottenham Arsenal derby the day after his death was announced, which was the Saturday, and it was the North London derby. And I went to it, and as you're walking round, people were singing the Rocky Rodecastle song. And as soon as you got in the ground, people were singing it. And then the gate and as the old plays came out, minute silence. I've never heard anything like it, or rather not heard anything like it.
Oh, really?
It was absolutely ridiculous. And the Arsenal fans applauded the Spurs fans, and the Spurs fans applauded the Arsenal fans. And it just sent shivers up my neck. There's only one other time I felt that in a football ground. And funnily enough, that was at White Hart Lane. And it was when Leeds were playing Tottenham, and we were being managed by George Graham. And our away fans, you know, it was, is he going to Tottenham or not? And we on the train there, we were talking to Tottenham fans, and we were like, well, if he wants to go, you can fucking have him. And they're like, well, we don't want him. And our fans, you know, just the little away section, started singing Stand Up If You Want the Truth. And I was in one of the main stands with the Spurs fans because I was there with a mate. Everybody starts getting up and starts singing Stand Up If You Want the Truth. The entire ground is stood up and singing Stand Up If You Want the Truth.
Wow.
And it was just like, wow. Whenever you get fans united like that, shivers. Would you like to hear my Ali Benarbia story, Dave?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. I think Stuart Pearce was manager when Benarbia was still playing. I think his last season, was it first season in the Premier League?
Yes.
Yeah. And Stuart Pearce tells this story that basically he says, like, what a player, what an incredible player, and what an amazing bloke. He's just like absolutely one of the greatest players he's ever played with. And Stuart Pearce has played with quite a few decent players.
Yeah.
He said about, you know, we'd given him an extra year contract, a year in the Premier League. And he said, don't know how far it was in, but after about like 10, 15 games or whatever, he goes, knocked on my door one day, he came in with his boots, and they were like club boots. He came in with his boots, he put his boots on my desk and said, sorry, Stuart, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I'm done.
Wow.
And and Stuart Pearce was like, but you've got like 9-10 months left in your contract. He was like, don't worry about it. I'm done. Sorry.
And, no, really?
Yeah, and he just apologised, walked out, never seen him again.
Wow.
And didn't want his contract playing up, just, you know, left. That was that. But what a class act.
Yeah, no, he was great. It was a good call, that, Howard. I hadn't forgotten about him. I was thinking about him the other day, but yeah, that's a good call. So are we going to talk about the present day?
Yeah.
Obviously, City have signed Haaland.
I just say City have signed Haaland, one of the hottest prospects in world football, for half what Chelsea paid for Lukaku.
Yeah, and less than half what we paid for Grealish.
Yes, I was going to mention Grealish as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, No, I mean, on paper, it looks like an amazing deal, but, you know, we shall see.
Yeah, we shall see. Can I tell my Alfie Inge Haaland story now?
Yes, you can. Of course, you can.
When he was at his Norwegian club, we had a look at him. Alfie brought him over to Leeds, and he was chatting with Victor Orta, and Victor Orta was saying, because I've heard this from Alfie Inge Haaland, from Haaland's agent. Because his agent, it represents quite a few Leeds players. And basically said, like, we came over to the club and kind of said, we met Victor and, you know, Alfie had a little walk around and he was given the Leeds United number 10 shirt with his name on the back. And the agent said, you know, I had to say to Victor, look, you know, Juventus are in for him. They really want him. So, you know, he's probably not going to be coming. And Victor was like, I know somebody, you know, typical Victor Orta, I know somebody at Juventus and maybe we can get him back on loan, you know? And of course that none of that happened anyway, but Alfie, bearing in mind, I think he's probably about 18, 19 at this age. What's he called?
Yeah. Erling or Brown.
Erling, there Brown. You go. So Alfie and Erling, Alfie and Erling are over, and the agent's discussing with Victor. Anyway, they finish up, and they said, and Alfie comes over to Victor Orta and says, "I've got a favour to ask." And he says, "What's that?" And he says, "You're playing QPR tomorrow, aren't you? Down at QPR." And he was like, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, we're in London tomorrow," and Alfie was wondering if we could get a couple of tickets for the away end. And Erling wanted to get a couple of tickets for the away end. And he was like, yeah, sure. So Alfie Inge Haaland and Erling Inge Haaland stood in the away end the following day at QPR as Leeds supporters.
Brilliant. And when was that?
That's like, you know, before he went to Borussia Dortmund.
That's great.
Or maybe a season or two before that. But yeah. Probably three, four years, if that. But yeah, Sam. He is a Leeds fan. There's great footage of when Norway played Northern Ireland, and all of the Northern Ireland players are trying to get Erling Haaland's shirt, and he just walks past them all straight up to Stuart Dallas, does the Leeds salute, and they swap shirts.
Is that been documented?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, mate.
Oh wow! Because obviously, we're all the Manchester Evening News is full of all the pictures of him wearing his City shirt when Alf was at City. You know, so it's like, oh no, he's a City fan.
No, he's a Leeds fan. Because Alfie was at Leeds when he was born, So anyway, we're keeping that. He's Leeds. And like, yeah, he just made at the end of the game, it's great. He just makes a beeline for Stuart Dallas. He's Northern Irish players like flying out of his way. And it's great because it's like he's like, as soon as the game's over, it's like he's running over to Stuart Dallas like, can I have your shirt?
Yeah, I mean, I think us getting Haaland, but there's going to be some outgoings. I think Gabriel Jesus, you know, it's not big news, is it? But he might be going to Arsenal.
You haven't got Jesus on the wing anymore.
No. Sterling, I think he's going to run his contract down. But, you know, there's talk that he might go I think he wants to go to Spain, but it's just whether or not, Madrid would be great for him. Yeah. And Zinchenko, probably. Although I saw an interview with Kyle Walker. And he mentioned that three of the best, most technically gifted players in the City squad, he named them, and one of them was Zinchenko, which surprised me and probably quite a few other people.
Well, it surprised me the fact that I always think of him as, for you lot, playing as a defender, and then you watch him play for Ukraine and run the fucking midfield against Scotland.
Yeah, I know. That's his natural position, isn't it? So that's what, because he's not great defensively, but then you think, yeah, but he's been played out of position. So and once you realise that, you think, yeah, okay, fair play. And he played well against Villa in the last game of the season. But
yeah. Well, I tell you what, you've just reminded me of one of the greatest transfers of modern day era, and it is of the era we're talking about. And it's not even a Premier League transfer. Ooh, Howard, who could it be? Well, a little club called Leicester City bought a virtually unknown Moroccan player called Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah. Yeah.
He won player of the season and they won the league.
Yeah, good call.
That's another major one. Fuck me, we've missed out the 15,000 to one team. You know, Jamie Vardy, how's that for a signing?
Yes. You know, I think, you've got to put him as... I mean, when you started, though, you mentioned the ones that kind of had the biggest impact and the kind of financial kind of significant football sense. But you're right, in terms of, you know, everybody's got their player that, you know, that Vardy is a brilliant example of that of that kind of player. And every club's got that player. Like I say, I think the Klopp era, the look back on Andy Robertson is, what a piece of work, you know, what a great piece of business that was. So just to kind of bring things up to date then, what do you think, what's the kind of outlook for Leeds and Liverpool in the market this summer?
We've already bought Brendan Aaronson from Red Bull Salzburg, and we've agreed a deal to buy Rasmus Christiansen from Red Bull Salzburg. Jesse Marsh used to manage Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah.
It's that's a good start, and apparently Christiansen, a lot of people saying he's the best. He's the best defender in the league. I mean, okay, it's only the Austrian Bundesliga, but you know, it's all right.
Well, for Liverpool, the elephant in the room, of course, is Sadio Mane, who at the moment might be going to Germany, but it's not been confirmed. But it's going to be a bit of a clear out anyway, because Divock Origi.
Oh mate, the best name in a Scouse accent ever. Divock Origi.
So he's off. I'd imagine there'll be offers for Oxlade-Chamberlain. Nico Williams is off. He did himself no harm the other day with his display for Wales. But we're in, I think it's Liverpool and Leeds are in for Calvin Ramsey.
Oh yeah, he's definitely going to come to us then, isn't he? I don't think.
Well, who knows? I've read conflicting reports. But for us, the key thing is replacing Mane, and I'd like to see Darwin Núñez. I don't know if you saw him play when Benfica played Liverpool in the Champions League. He was absolutely immense. He was just a beast, a complete and utter beast. And he gave I think it was Konate and Van Dijk the run around. He's so fast for a big man. He's about 6'2", but he's so fast.
Yeah.
So there's been talk about him coming in, but it's all about the price.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to pick up on Oxlade-Chamberlain, actually, if I don't mind, because that's the second. This is the second English midfielder you lot have ruined with injuries. Yeah, because one of our best players leading up to World Cup, and he'd have been in the starting 11, is Adam Lallana.
Yes,
he and Southgate really liked him, as did I, and he's a fantastic player.
Very elegant.
And he ruined him with injuries, and then the Ox was playing brilliantly for England, and you just fucking ruined him with injuries as well. It's not good enough. English midfielders, steer clear of Liverpool.
I have to say, I might have to love you and leave you.
That's fine. That's all right. We've concluded that anyway.
Okay. Well, let's conclude today's business by saying that hopefully we all get some decent players in, and we all get, well, I think I'm probably the only one who's going to say, and we get rid of some dead wood, because I think my club's got dead wood, you got. Yeah. We'll take your dead wood off you, no problem. You know, the Ox, you want to give him, send him over to Leeds. We'll have him, you know. Anybody, Jesus, send him over.
Yeah, the one player I don't want to leave that I'm hearing about is Gundogan, who I absolutely love, Ilkay Gundogan, but I think he may be going. So he lands, he'll be amazing.
It was rumoured he was going to go, wasn't it, last season, but he stayed. Yeah. But it looks like, you know, I'll tell you what as well, Bernardo Silva, you've got to keep hold of that guy.
Oh, I hope so. I love him. He's one of the greatest players we've ever had.
I saw him live when you played Fulham. and I was about three rows from the pitch. Really, you know where you can really get an out, you get the camber. And I swear, I know it's cliche, but I swear his boots did not pierce the turf. Yeah, he was just lightly skipping along it. You know, it was just mad. I've never genuinely been that close to that much football genius.
One of the best re-signings for Liverpool is a player you'll both know well. He's signed a year extension. It's James Milner.
Oh yeah, Millie. Yeah,
nice one. All right, okay. Let's wrap it, guys. Let's call it.
The,
Great.
See you later, guys. Cheers. Bye. Bye-bye.